Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to this week's episode of the Mum and Mother podcast, brought to you as always by the wonderful Golding Accountancy, wearegolding.com. Hi, how are you? This week is the final part of my conversation with wonderful Henry Haight. I hope you've enjoyed the last two episodes. I've had some really lovely feedback from people. He's such an interesting guy and has really had a lot of different and both wonderful and terrible experiences in his life. So I do hope you've enjoyed it. This final part focuses more on his dealings with celebrities, his relationship with Amy Winehouse, the legal battles he's had with his shop, and becoming an artist, like recognising himself as an artist and beginning to sell his work. It was so lovely talking to him. I find him so interesting. And he's such a lovely guy as well. So I do hope you enjoy it. And I'll see you in a bit.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Work. Work.
So you came to London. What did you do? How did you get your first job?
I went to a bunch of tattoo shops first, just blindly.
Yeah.
And I met with Alex Binney at NTU. And he virtually told me, well, I could only offer you, because I think he had like 6 or 7 artists at the time. And he's like, I'd only be able to offer you one day a week. But he's like, I do know a guy who's needs an artist.
Yeah.
And the girl got deported. So I went to Soho Diamond Jacks.
Yeah.
And I met with him. And I think I had like 5 quid to my name.
Yeah.
And he hired me and I started the next day.
Did you have a visa to work here? How did it work with...
You What's that?
How did you work here? Did you have a visa?
No.
You didn't? Oh, so it was all under the table?
No, I didn't have a visa.
Okay, yeah.
I didn't have a visa and then... I started working for him.
Yeah.
The very first day, I made 380 pounds.
Yep.
I was like, man, you know, there are days where I've made that, you know, there are days where I made like 900.
Yeah.
In a day. And, you know, with art, if you're good, you're a good business, you can make a lot of money, but you have to be very frugal in how you spend it.
Yeah.
I look at money like a hammer. My husband, my ex-husband, hated that because you're just like, my brother's the same way. They kind of want to hoard money.
Yeah.
And with artists, most artists, with galleries or tattoos, you do a 50-50 split.
Yeah.
Then when I left Diamond Jacks, I left actually in the end of 2000.
Okay.
And I didn't work for about 6-7 months before I found a shop.
Yeah.
And I opened Prick December 2001.
Okay.
And that was a struggle because I had cowboy builders who like took me for money.
Yeah.
And you know, all the, you know, there's shows where someone like, oh, I'm going to chase my dream, and they go to some different country and going to open a chalet, a hotel, bed and breakfast.
Yeah.
And everything that goes wrong goes wrong. And you know, that happened to me. And I struggled for about 3 years to just like try to make the business a go. And I was hellbent on making the business work.
Yeah.
And it wasn't till 2008, 2009 that people started to say, oh, we like what you do. And, you know, by then I started tattooing these, like, and, you know, with Amy Winehouse coming into the picture, that changed a completely different ballpark.
Yeah.
And I never wanted to be known as one of those dry cleaner tattooists, you know, hanging all the pictures.
Yeah.
But, and again, social media hadn't really kicked off to that level yet. And I really held back on that. And one of the guys who trained me was like, you're an idiot if you don't. You should fucking just milk it for all it's worth. And I'm like, oh, okay, well. And it really starts to snowball. And, you know, tattooing is taking me to different countries. It's, you know, put me on TV shows. And it wasn't, that wasn't the objective. It wasn't to meet these famous people. I feel very fortunate, very blessed that I got to meet some incredibly gifted people who have their own legacies in their own right. That doesn't make me feel any more special, but I feel very blessed that I got to see and meet them, get to know them, as well as hearing their own struggles and get to know them personally. That I'm like, oh, okay, this is, you know, they're just like other people. And there have been a few times where I feel like I have to check if there's a fucking horseshoe surgically attached to my ass, because I was like, I don't know how the fuck this happened, other than kismet or serendipity in some way.
Well, but people came to you because of your talent, didn't they?
Say
that's
again?
Not they, people came to you because of your talent.
Yeah, I'd like to think that, you know.
Well, why else would they
When I tattooed Boy George McQueen, I tattooed McQueen's assistant, then he brought in Boy George. McQueen's assistant brought in Boy George, and then Boy George brought in McQueen. And it was kind of like, you know, when I tattooed Amy, I then tattooed, at first I tattooed Pete Doherty and Carl, and didn't know Amy yet. But then it wasn't until I saw the Libertines album cover with them, both with the tattoos, I was like, what? Holy shit. And then I didn't know that Amy knew Pete.
Yeah.
And then Amy also knew Patrick Wolfe. And but you would never think, like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You know? And so, you know, like, I tattooed Warren.
Yeah.
And you. And then Pip showed up. And I was like, you know. So it kind of, but I think that was the thing about, because tattooing is very intimate.
Yeah.
That you're entrusting someone and you engage with the person. And, you know, I've done hair and makeup for productions, but never worked in a hair salon. But when you're having your hair done, it's a very intimate thing. You have to engage with the person in the chair, and you get to know them. And you're sharing stories, you get to see how they're doing and check upon them and stuff like that. And I've always liked that aspect of that job. And then you get to meet others. And with Amy, I was introduced to other people than her social circle. And it wasn't till her death, unfortunately, that I got to get to know the family.
Yeah.
And, you know, now when there are certain things with, they're trying to reshape her narrative. I think because Me Too movement, all these other social causes, it's no longer acceptable to make someone who's suffering from, you know, drug addiction considered like a mental illness in a way.
Yeah.
Because I've had my own issue, my own struggles with it.
Yeah.
And now when I see the family, it's, you know, it's through events for the foundation.
Yeah.
And stuff, you know. And just the other day, I heard that Chance's husband, Richard, passed away. And I had just seen him in November at the Design Museum.
Yeah.
Exhibition.
Oh, that's a shame.
It was amazing because you see, like, all her Grammys, all the dress she wore on stage. And there was a dress she wore when she got acquitted for punching a girl in the face. And I remember the day she came, it was a Vivian Westwood one, and it was right, and I remember, oh my God, she wore that day. 20 minutes, she left the court, came straight to my shop, and I was like, wow, you're dressed. She's like, I just came from court. She's like, I'm a petite little girl. And I'm like, did you really punch that girl? She's like, she's like 300 pounds. And she said it, and I remember giving her a side eye, and she had 4 bodyguards with her. And,
wow.
But I remember I got really emotional seeing that dress. And you never look at, I never looked at clothes that way. But I think when you go to see exhibitions, you still have the mental capacity to interpret something visually and it affects you emotionally. And that's the thing I've always loved about art.
Yeah.
And seeing, Janice and the family and Mitch. And then I showed up with a girl, Mona, who's a dancer, had the Amy Winehouse bouffant. And, you know, they were like, who's this girl? You know, and, but it's nice to see them in that capacity to catch up with them. And Amy's stylist. And, but now, you know, I still have the challenges to try to keep the art and the tattooing going. I will eventually pull back from tattooing and just do it on the side, but primarily I'd like to do more illustration and artwork.
So with the art then, have you always carried on doing your art while you were building the tattoo stuff, or did you go back
when I started tattooing? I primarily just did tattooing and I tried to do painting, but the weird thing is that, you know, when you approach galleries, you kind of have to know certain artists, or is your art compatible to what the other artists are selling, and virtually, is it up to scale, is it up to par, you know, what narrative are you trying to sell, what do you have to say, and virtually how do they sell you, because you're not only buying the work, you're buying a story. And I've had to learn that early on. And when I started to approach galleries, it was through other artists I knew or exhibited with. And virtually, you know, you have to have like a CV and a PR. And they want to see who have you shown with, what's your work like. And again, you have to virtually make work that is compatible. to the other artists. So yeah. if a buyer, a collector goes in, I like this piece and that, will this go with the furniture?
Yeah.
Will this go with the color scheme? Is this, you know, something that I like? I also have to kind of sometimes consider that, not in the sense of, I have in the past, it's worked for me and against me, that if I make something to pander to the gallery buyer solely, it can fail miserably, but other times it's worked. In, like, who's this made for? Ultimately, when I make work, I want to make work that I want to look at or I want to own.
Yeah, that's surely that's the point of being
yeah.
an artist, really, is doing what it's expressing yourself, isn't it?
Yeah,
you've got to worry about what someone might like.
It has to be something that you want to say, what do you want to convey, as well as why are you doing it? And for me, would I want to own this? Would I want to say, oh, yeah, this is cool? Because I have two pieces in my toilet that I look at and I still love it. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you do a commission, you have to go buy, like a tattoo, you have to go buy what they want.
Yeah.
And with certain work, I've had work that's just flown out the door, and others, so I'm like, oh, this may be a hard sell. And I wish I was one of those artists that could paint like a landscape of, you know, the sea and be happy with that, but I'm not.
Yeah.
I've never been that way. And that's kind of hindered me. And I think, okay. But I do know that with any level of success, you're always going to have different challenges, no matter what tier you're at. So those are mine.
Yeah.
And I have to go, okay.
But that's what makes you you. That's your art, isn't it?
Yeah, you have to be authentic to who you are.
Yeah.
And I've been very fortunate that, okay, it has worked for me and against me, but I think that a lot of artists have that same capacity, that some, you know, not everyone wants to buy something controversial. They kind of want, you know, the seascape or the Arthur Kincaid, you know, windmill water fountain thing, you know, in the Sleepy Valley Hills. And
yeah,
that's great. But that's not something, especially if I buy art.
Yeah.
That's not what I'm going to do. But in doing this pursuit, I've been very fortunate to build really good work relationships with certain gallerists and directors and maintain a working relationship with them. Without...
So how did you find them? Or did they approach you? How did you get it out
To approach me, and then I've approached others to say, hey, you know, I like... And then other artists go, you know, his stuff would work great here. And when they've seen it, they go, yeah, can we have some of your stuff? And that's a nice accolade to go, okay, great. But you still have to treat it as a business.
Yeah.
And some I've approached and they're like, well, it's not the roster we that it could go with right now. And, you know, maybe later. And then others, they've approached me and I'm like, I don't think my stuff would be a good fit. You know, because I'm at a particular bracket right now. Not that, like, I'm better than, but you have to watch your price margin on how you sell certain stuff. It's in order, because eventually you want people to invest in your work that it'll appreciate in value. And with tattooing, you know, you do the work, you forget about it, and they go, and that's it.
Yeah.
But with art, you're kind of creating a body work, and then you're going, okay, and then once that's done, it's, now what? And then you go into the next piece, and say, how is this going to correlate to this one and this one? And I always try to figure out, okay, if I was going to do retrospective, how is this all going to tie in together?
Yeah.
And that's what I normally try to think in my head as a big picture of things.
Yeah.
And with a lot of work, sometimes if I'm doing something like, this is not working, I'll stop, put it away, come back to it. Or I'll look back at it and go, should I do that?
Yeah.
You know? But again, you know, you have to, you are in isolation, and when you open that up, it is kind of like bearing your soul.
Yeah.
To the world. And I never thought of it that way, but it essentially is new hope that someone loves enough to go, I'm going to look after this, I'm going to love forever. Yeah. And it's a nice feeling when you see what your work looks like in someone's house, because you feel more than any Instagram light.
Yeah.
You go, because the home is such an intimate and private thing.
Yeah.
That, you know, your work is over the mountain. You go, wow. You know, this guy that I know, he lives near Hertfordshire. He's got like 6 of my pieces in his house.
Wow.
And one of my bit largest ones, like in his dining room. And I'm just like, man, you know, I'm grateful for them. And you have to be nice to these people. Not because they're paying a lot, but you kind of just, they love what you do, so you can't be, you know, nasty. I've met some artists that have been very, like, I've even fallen into that trap where I'm like, you know, I need to pull the stick out of my ass and just get over myself. But when someone says, look how you've made my house look, I'm like, wow. Yeah. You know, that's one of the highest forms of compliments and flattery that they can give you. It was like, even if it says, oh, I want to wear your work. It's, yeah. How could you not go, that is an honor. It's a privilege that they're bestowing that on me. So that I've never taken that for granted. I did in the past, but now I don't.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's things that you have to be mindful of and say, okay. But being an artist is a never-ending journey, because you're always in a form of self-discovery. And you go, okay, now what's next? What's next? Ultimately, I just hope that I create a culture growth that leaves some form of impact. It's nice when people come to the studio just to get the Amy Hearts. That's the only tattoo I will recreate. And, you know, I get to meet them, talk to them. And
do you get a lot of that?
Huh?
Do you get a lot of those ones?
Lately, I have, yeah. They just want to come and... And they've all been so different, so wonderful. And I never thought that in a million years that her coming in would have changed everything, you know. More her than anyone else, you know.
Yeah.
Because I've tattooed Boy George's brother, and, you know, he's lovely. And, you know, he's a good bitch. But his brother, David, is just... is a big sweetheart, you know.
Yeah.
And it's kind of nice when you get to meet the families and you go, okay. Yeah. Then you really get to know the person rather than the celebrity. And some of my art is based on celebrity, but not in the sense of hero worship, but money plays a factor into my work as well, where money, it doesn't have an intrinsic value. It's kind of like a false idol.
Yeah.
And celebrity to me is also... like this false idol worship.
Yeah.
You know, you have 15 minutes and then that's it. Then what?
Yeah.
And I can't see how people could want to be like, who ideologize the Kardashians because of what they represent. You know, I don't get it, but it's I give them... more power for their hustle.
Yeah.
You know, they really come at it from every angle, but there's an ick factor to that. That I don't like the fact that the women latch onto these men, try to like procreate, and then so that they have a story for their shows, and then they're always hawking things.
Yeah.
And I was like, well,
it's not healthy. None of it's healthy. The amount of plastic surgery, the amount of... It's just...
And the weird thing is, I think it's impressionable to young kids now because they want to emulate what they see on TV. Yeah. You know, it was one thing for me to want to be Ace Frehley when I was 10. I didn't think, you know, when I was 14, I wanted to be Tom of Finland. I wanted to emulate factors of that that I saw. And with Andy Warhol and that crowd, I wanted to investigate and But because you're impressionable and you want to emulate the things that you like or and see how it fits on you. But I can't imagine, you know, my daughter saying, oh, I'm going to do an OnlyFans. And like,
yeah.
You know, I'd rather her, you know, be a stripper.
Yeah.
You know, and just like, because I have friends who are strippers. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think, I don't know, there's something very superficial about saying, I want to be an influencer. And I don't like the word, oh, I'm a creative. Because, I don't know, that's like McDonald's saying, that's like, you know, a chicken cordon bleu burger. It's like, no, it's not. They're two completely different things. And like when I say there's postcard art or dental office art, and then there's art.
Yeah.
And how you experience something and how you go about it are completely different. But with this watered down version of stuff and putting a filter on it, I have a real problem with it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's now I think, okay, I just be as general as possible, and just I want to be as authentic to me, like it or not, because yeah. I don't have the time or capacity to say or care anymore. So
when the art started picking up, did you naturally start winding down the tattoo?
No, I kept them both. It wasn't until I got sideswiped with the trademark dispute with the cactus shop.
Yes. Yeah.
And that really threw me for a loop, because I virtually put my head down. And when I put my head up, I'd been in the shop 16 years. And all of a sudden I started hearing about, oh, I'm this brand.
Yeah. You know?
And the my solicitor was like, well, you're a brand, Henry. I'm like, no, Oprah Winfrey is a brand. He's like, no. You are a brand. Believe it or not, you're a brand. And when I lost, I thought, I was working really hard just to do what I loved.
Yeah.
In 2 years, I spent $47,000. My marriage is falling apart.
Yeah.
Like, virtually just, everything around me was crumbling. I didn't have the energy to go to the shop, encourage five other artists and a piercer and an apprentice to go, okay, we're going to do this.
Let's
go and, you know, and pay the bills, rent, and get creative. I was depleted. I was like,
yeah.
I just wanted to end it all. And that's where I felt like, okay, something's wrong.
Yeah.
And I had to really kind of sit with myself and figure out what it was, because I wasn't happy, and I didn't feel that I was I was a complete loser, and even though I lost, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna have to file for bankruptcy. And this is the thing that I don't like about influencers now. I don't like when people go, I'm living my best life, because life happens when you get punched in the face. You know, it isn't when you're sending your, you know, vajayjay in Aruba, you know, doing lines of coke, you know, P. Diddy's house, you know, Dom Perignon and all that shit. That's not life. Life is when you get, you know, you get railroaded, you know, hit by the side of a car and your leg is about to be amputated. Now what the fuck are you going to do? Yeah. That is your life.
I
was crying, and the solicitor said, you're sitting in my office, you've just lost, and a lawyer asked, did you make a joke about a girl wearing a $27 weave? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, you lost the court case, you didn't lose your life. He goes, I represent Apple, Rihanna, all this stuff. And that's why I hired him. I thought,
he's
a fucking shark.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to have to pick you and represent your case. You're in my office. You won. You're a success. You could you afforded this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was like, and I thought, holy shit. Because he basically said, you came here with nothing. Look what you've achieved, even though you've lost.
Yeah.
He's like, she doesn't do what you do. You are you, and that's what made you, and that's what got you here. And I was like, and it's so hard to forget because we want the end result of, you know, okay, yeah, I make art and I sell it. But I was like, it's the work that got me there.
Yeah.
And that passion. It wasn't a click. It wasn't like it was, and I wasn't doing it for the money. It was validation of whatever. I was just doing it. I love what I did. And, you know, I love interacting with people. I still do to this day. But I was just like, holy shit, you know? And from that point to now, it's been 5 years.
Has it been 5 years? Shit.
It's been 5 years. Because I met you and Warren around 2013, 14.
Did I have Lola?
Huh?
Did I have Lola? I think I met you.
No, you hadn't had Lola yet.
No, so that she was born in 2011. So it must be more like 2009, 2010.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, because I remember because Pip had just done the Dan Lesac stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, but it wasn't like, oh, I need to know all these people. It was just kind of like this more 3 degrees of separation from that, you know, stuff. And I remember telling Pip, I'm like, if you fucking get Tom Hardy to just sit on my face and Hardy all over my face, I will tattoo you for free for the rest of your life. And he's like, you know, he's like, oh, man, I can't do it. I'm like, come on, you know, chop, chop. I know you, like, you got it in, you know. but the whole thing is that wasn't the end result of why I, you know, it was just through these meeting of people that it kind of happened that I met. And that's the thing that I've always loved about meeting really creative people, that you migrate towards these things in a sense, and that, you know, if you're genuine enough and you're open to their hospitality and their friendliness, that it kind of opens other things. I don't prescribe to the toxic positivity of, you know, oh, just, you know, I like a good bitch and put good comment and burn as the next person, but I think I'm too cynical in that sense that I, you know. But with doing what I've done, I've learned that, you know, I have to look at the pitfalls. And that was a pitfall and a half that kind of, I think, had to have me consider what success was as a whole and now what. And it has taken me, firstly, 5 years to recover to go, okay.
Yeah.
I would say for 2.5, 3 years, I was like, there's no way in hell. But it all happened at once, like this zit, just like a pop. And I'm really glad that it did, because for a while I was really angry, and I think I had to go through my therapist told me to read Dante's Inferno.
Yeah.
He goes down the pit of hell and all this stuff. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, because that's what it very much felt like. I took the red pill, went down the rabbit hole, and spiraled. And now, when I do stuff, I, and especially now when I go to galleries, I now look at art based on my mental disposition, what I'm attracted to. I looked at other work when I go, God, I used to really love that painting. And I go, oh God, I was fucking depressed at that. And now when I look at the color schemes, because you never stop looking at those. And I think mothers and parents especially should always try to encourage their kids to look at things that way, because kids do naturally.
Yeah.
They look at things in such an honest, genuine form that I love.
Yeah.
And when I've talked to kids about how they view things, it's so simplistic and so genuine and honest that just like there's no bullshit.
Yeah.
And I was like, how the fuck do we get so jaded and twisted, and like, you know, sour? That was like, but we want to keep that alive. And like, it, when I've talked to your girls, they're so jovial and just so, you know, they're full of spirit.
Yeah.
Juno has a lot of spunk in her. And I imagine she gets that from you, you know. And that's one thing that you, that is a testament to your parenting, that you're kind of not trying to mold her into something, but through osmosis for her just being near you, that she's picking up those characteristics. That I think through my mom, how she, when she spoke visually, I would look at things and see that.
Yeah.
And think, okay, that's how I'm going to see stuff now. And I, now when I look at art and experience it, I want to take it. Even if I look at work, and I was looking at that, I'm like, okay, that ocean piece, like, what are the things I like about it? Because
yeah.
I got to say something nice before I go back in and, you know, make a comment. Yeah. But, you know, I now have to look back and say, okay, these are things I like about it. It's not necessary for me, but I still have to have an appreciation for it.
Yeah.
And 2 months ago, I was at the National Gallery, and I saw one of the Monet Lily ones. And I always walk past and go, oh, it's a big old mess.
Yeah.
And, you know, you call a Monet, someone a Monet, you know.
Yeah.
From a distance, they're all beautiful and stuff, but up close, it's just a big old mess. I virtually walked up to a Monet, and I was sitting there looking at the lily pads.
Yeah.
And I was just, like, seeing the brush, like, just like, wow. And just, like, I had to, and really taking that, and as a kid, I looked at the impact. Now, as an adult, I would look at the technical, and I want to sniff the, oh, it's somewhere, the docent is like too close.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back up. And, you know, I now, when I go see galleries and I see kids look at artwork, there was a Cy Tom Lee drawing with the big red orange things. And the kid's like, oh, no, no. And I remember telling the kid, look behind. You see the other painting. And the parent was just like, dismissed. And the child was looking, he's like, oh, you see the strokes up there? And I'm like, yeah, he's like, you see it over there? And he started to see it. And but, you know, my parents didn't do that for me, but I think they thought if they took me to these places that I would just pick it up.
Yeah.
And see it. But I think they were the gateway to bring me to those things.
I think as a parent, you just have to show your children different things, and then they'll just gravitate naturally to what they like.
Yeah, they will definitely gravitate towards it. For me, music and art were really, really profound on me. And that my that music was always in our house, you know. And when I looked at my parents' records and stuff, their record collection was our archive. We had, like, you know, the typical ugly, you know, Arthur Kincaid paintings and stuff. And then when I got into punk, I started looking at vintage paintings in charity shops, you know, and the whole Margaret Keane with big eyes from the 60s, because people were giving those away.
Yeah.
And a lot of my friends were buying them. And I love old clown paintings and dog paintings, and I still collect them. And, you know, to some people, they're like, that's junk. There's something about those things that I've relished as a kid. As a kid, I loved dogs, always loved dogs. And, you know, we had a dog, much to the chagrin of my teacher, who wrote about smells. And I said, I like the way my wet dog cocaine smells. And my teacher was like, you have a dog named Cocaine? And I was like, yeah. She's like, you name your dog. Well, my dad named my dog Cocaine. And, you know, I can imagine her expression. She was like shocked. But, yeah, those are the things I looked at. And I think my mom had a really keen eye for detail, which I think I inherited from her when she made us costumes and stuff. Now when I look at stuff, I really have to step back from tattooing. I can tell that certain pieces are like, oh, man, I was lazy that day. And others, it's like, okay, fucking... There are times where I forget I've done a piece and I've looked at it and like, holy shit, I did that? Wow.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm so critical of it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And I've never wanted to be one of those artists that, okay, do the technique and just cookie cutter it.
Yeah.
Because to me, then I might as well just be a sewing machine.
Yeah.
Doing the same thing. But with painting, it is very much like dating and having a relationship, because sometimes it's really hard and you're trying to make everything. I'll explain it like this. The creative process to me feels like a hurricane in my stomach. And sometimes I can sense when they're coming and then I start making notes, or I put on my phone, like, yeah. I make a note. And then I go into this insular, almost the walls go up, and I have to methodically put the work together how I see it. And when I'm in the eye of the hurricane, I can see all the pieces, but I have to arrange it in a way, in a sequence, that I know that's how it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
I can see them, but I'm reaching for them, trying to grab them, put them... And the weird thing is that when that happens, that's all I see. I didn't see the dog. I didn't see
yeah.
my part. And it used to really bother Brent that I would exclude him from that process, because I would just close off. And I would be really apologetic. Like, I'm not doing it, but this is just... And when I'd be in the studio, I'm by myself, so
yeah.
no one would bother me. Sometimes Mabel would bark, or Jolene, and I'd have to, okay, walk for an hour, come back, and then I'd have to go back and... And then other times, it almost come back reverse, or I put the painting in not the correct way, and I have to put it away for a bit, and then come back to it, or the drawing, and go...
Yeah.
And then, okay, then input it, and then I can piece it to where that's where the exhale comes from.
Yeah.
I painted my ex-husband... a year before I left him. I'd sketched him, but I never painted him. And I put it on a heart canvas because I wanted to let him know how much I loved him.
Yeah.
And in a way, I kind of knew that once I did that, that was going to be the end of it for us.
Really?
And I spent 4 months trying to get his expression right. And I remember I showed it to Mabel. I'm like, who's this Pucci? And she's like, rah, rah. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then I was like, painting's done. I gave it to him. And the last time I saw it, I couldn't bear to look at it because it was heartbreaking.
Yeah, yeah. Because
it was like, my heart is hanging on a wall gathering dust.
Yeah.
And but you have to let those things go and say, okay. But yeah, I'm still committed to creating and working. And
Do you do something every day?
Well, I try to do 3 to 4 times a week.
Yeah.
I try to do 2 days where I just don't do it. Because I'm lazy by nature, but I have to tell myself, okay, get up, do this, go, and get on with it. And the other times I'm like, I just feel the... I'll be painting at like 2 a.m.
Yeah.
And sometimes email. I was doing an email last night at 12:30.
Yeah.
Sending okay, and comes to territory, and I don't mind it, but it's part of the job.
Yeah.
And that's a part of the job that you know it is a job. But with the painting aspect of creating or just tattooing and interacting with a client, those are things that I do love. And, you know, because it brings us to elements like this, to where we're just engaged. I like the exchange.
Yeah.
With trying to sell a collector a piece, you're trying to sell the work and engage them. And you know, and I feel really weird about that because I'm like, hey, invest in me, I'm worth it. You know, but when I get to meet people and then they go, I really love this, and I've drunkenly said, oh, if you buy it, I'll hang it up. You know, and my director's like, said you'd hang it up for this. You have to go to their house and hang it. I'm like, oh, okay. Give me the address and, you know, I'll show up and, you know. And it's nice because, you know, they make dinner and we talk and we just have a good time. And but it's upswings to it, definitely, that I wouldn't change for anything. But, you know, it is the thing that you have to keep at.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, I'm sure you tell your girls you have to keep, if you really love something and you want to make them get the most out of it, you have to treat like anything.
Yeah.
And just
keep
at it. Not give up.
Yeah.
So in that respect, yeah, I'm not giving up.
Yeah.
And you take the sweet with the sour.
So where do people get your stuff?
They could get it online at Henry Haight Fine Art. They could get it at Start in Rotterdam, Saatchi Art through Venice and the UK, Fleek Gallery in Devon, Subversion Gallery in Scotland, Imitate and West Bank are my primary here in London.
Yeah.
And yeah, just occasionally, hopefully a few other places.
Yeah.
I'd like to break the Chinese market right now.
Yeah.
Because that's where the money is.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Some of the artists I know, they're starting to gravitate towards that way. And it's nice to see them actually getting up to another point because you want to... I was thinking one blue chip artist says that makes room for us to get up on the other tier and move up.
Yeah.
And it's nice to actually see also when your friends succeed that, you know, and they do things to go, wow, okay. You know, I feel fortunate that I know a lot of creative people rather than famous people or whatever. It's just, you know, like I know strippers suck, circus and whatever, but I just find them just as intriguing.
Yeah.
And, you know, they always have a good story.
Yeah.
But, you know what it's like, so. But yeah, they can find my stuff online. Or just Google Henry Haight.
Yeah.
It's weird because I now don't Google myself.
Oh, really?
I did at one point, but I don't.
Yeah.
And, you know, some artists know me as a tattooist, and tattooists, I'm like, oh, well, he sells art.
Yeah.
And somewhere in between. And I'm like, okay. But I think I wanted that for myself. Chosen that for myself. And then, you know, I feel very blessed in that way to do that. So, yeah.
Good. Well, thank you.
Huh? Excellent. Woo-hoo!
Hi. Yeah, so that was the final part. If you have anything you'd like to talk to me about, then please get in touch, Mum and Mama Pod on all the socials or at Gmail as well. I've managed to secure some quite exciting guests, but I don't want to say too much about it until I've recorded them because I don't like getting excited about things before they've actually happened. But the podcast conference day was very beneficial to making some really good links. So that's all very exciting. I recorded a really good podcast with Vic Slayton the other week, The Comedy Arcade, which was a lot of fun. That's going to be coming out soon. And Vic's is actually my guest on next week's podcast. So she's hilarious. Check her out on the socials. I'll post links to everything, obviously, next week. But I thought I did have another, obviously, because it's Pride Month, I did have another... You know, I don't want to jump on the bandwagon for Pride. I speak to all different kinds of people all the time, so I don't want to be like, oh, so for Pride Month I'm just going to put out all my gay podcasts. Henry, it was just a chance that Henry's podcast came out this month, but I did, because Henry's was quite a heavy conversation, I've decided to put Vix's in for next week because we have a laugh. And then next week I've got my lovely friend Claire on to talk about her addiction, her recovery, and her coming out as well. So, but that's quite a heavy, that's a heavy couple of episodes. So, again, it we have a laugh, but the some of the topics we cover are very heavy, so I thought I'd have a bit of a light interlude in between. So yes, but if you have any guest suggestions, please get in touch and let me know. Or if you'd like to come on, if you have a story. Everyone's got a story. But yeah, I hope you're good. Stay safe, stay sane. And I'll see you next week. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.